Welcome to Water Insider, a podcast brought to you by DHI. Whether you work with urban or inland water systems, marine or offshore, we get experts to discuss everything water, so you can be the first to learn the latest in water tech and trends.
Welcome, everybody, to this podcast episode on the advantages of protecting sea species for the offshore wind industry and why dynamic modeling of sea species is an advantage for the offshore industry. My name is Frank Thompson. I'm a senior marine scientist, and my guest today is Henrik Skov, who is a senior marine project manager and spatial ecologist. A very warm welcome to you, Henrik.
Thanks a lot.
Henrik, we both have described the impact that offshore wind have or can have on marine life, such as seabirds and marine mammals. And in order to protect marine life, the developers and sometimes the government have to do what we call an environmental impact assessment. They have to do an inventory of the species in the project area, which is basically describing who is there and at what period and at what time of the year the animals are in that project area. Now, in this context, can you actually quickly just outline what are animal distribution models and why are these models useful for the industry to apply?
Yeah, I believe in if you go back in time, they were not used very much in relation to impact assessments and other assessments in relation to human activities offshore. But now requirements in relation to impact assessments, they are actually increasing. So as you say, there's a need to document not only what you are actually observing in an area, in a, for example, during a survey, you need to put it into a general context. You need to describe, for example, the distribution of a species, movements of a species over long periods of time. So what you're actually able to assess is the typical occurrence of a species in an area for over long periods of time. It's not only 1 year, but many years, for example. So that is why modeling has become an important tool, not only modeling of the distribution, but also modeling or prediction of how animals are moving through an area.
Yes, but why don't we use just monitoring for it? I mean, in the past, we have been doing, for example, in Germany, we have been doing aerial surveys and, you know, shipboard surveys on harbor purposes. So that gave us an enormous database. So if somebody asks you, why are you doing the modeling and not monitoring instead? So what is your answer to that? What is the advantage?
There are two main reasons to do modeling and not just rely on survey data. The first reason is that no matter what surveys you're doing, they will always be representing periods of time, so like small windows of time, and they will be fragmented both in space and in time. So we need a way to extrapolate those results both spatially and temporally to show where animals are all the time over a period. So that's one reason. The other reason is that from the data itself, it's very difficult to identify how sure you are on the result. You can, of course, look at the patterns, but you actually need to have a means to quantify the confidence in what the distribution is, what the density is, for example. So you need to be able to quantify uncertainty. That's the other big good reason to use models.
So basically what you're saying is that these kind of models are, or the monitoring that we use are basically best of their snapshots in time. Let's say we go out on an area survey, we observe marine life once a month, but the models are really telling us about the dynamics of the distribution over the entire period. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I mean, once you are actually monitoring offshore, you're in an environment that changes continuously. So even if you're doing a survey, it just takes 1 day. During that day, you actually have many different situations. So the environment, the landscape in the sea will change continuously over that 1 day. So you're not actually sampling one situation. You are sampling many situations. So if you have a chance based on many of these surveys, if you want to have a chance to actually generalize patterns, you need to relate those observations to the dynamics of the sea, the hydrodynamics, the currents, the water masses, etc. That's the difference between monitoring in the marine environment and monitoring in terrestrial environments.
Basically, the animal distribution models tell us a little bit also why animals are in an area, not only when they are in an area.
Yeah, to some extent, that's true. But the main benefit of using the models is that they provide predictions.
Right.
So they generalize patterns, they generalize movements.
Henrik, maybe you can talk us through this kind of modeling a little bit in more detail. There are two basic models we apply. One is called dynamic habitat modeling, and the other one is these agent-based models. Can you talk us through these two models, how they are set up and how they basically work?
Yeah, so the habitat models are statistical models. So you use your observations as the response variable, and then you try to predict the distribution of a response variable in relation to oceanographic variables. And yeah, they can be, for example, current speed, they can be salinity, for example. You then construct a prediction model that describes the distribution from these covariables. Once you've actually constructed a model that describes a reasonable proportion of the variability in your observations, you can then use that model to make predictions for certain periods, for example, or certain oceanographic conditions. So that's habitat model in a few words.
So basically, we have an animal position, we have a location of an animal, and we correlate that to the environmental variables, and we identify actually the environmental variables that drive the movements of the animals in an area. For example, is that, for example, a current?
Yeah, actually, these habitat models can be designed from being relatively simple. If, for example, you just link your observations to mean values over a month, to a very complicated models where you link them up with the actual conditions that occurred maybe just within that time span of 1 hour where this animal was seen at that location. So there's a variation in the complexity of these models. You can also include descriptions of how the distribution changes with seasons and with years, even if there is a change in the overall abundance of the species over years, that can also be included, like trends, for example. So you can actually end up with a very complex and full description of where the animals is. And you can also actually add negative responses. So if there are pressures, it could be shipping lanes that have a negative effect on the distribution of the species. That sort of effect can also be included.
Some kind of pressure assessment. And this is, I think, where also the agent-based modeling comes in, isn't it? I mean, can you explain a little bit about the general concept behind the agent-based modeling and its application?
Yeah, it's completely different from the habitat modeling. The habitat modeling is more or less driven by the data. So you don't actually code the relationship. You let the computer train, work on the data, and the relationship that will come from that training will drive the predictions. In an agent-based model setup, you as a scientist, actually, you write the code, you write the relationship, the way that the animal is moving. You actually describe that yourself and code that into the model. So that's the overall biggest difference. And there's another big difference, which is, of course, that in an agent-based model, there are actually no limitations to the amount of or number of behavioral parameters that you can include.
Right.
So it's very different from habitat modeling, which basically just can be used for describing one parameter, for example, distribution or density, in relation to the environment. But in an agent-based model, that has a lot of artistic degrees of freedom, which makes it appealing if you want to describe movements, for example.
So basically, I also always understood that the habitat models tell us why animals on an area, what drives their movements, whereas the agent-based models describe the movements of the animals themselves. And the way we apply that in practice is actually to study the impacts of underwater noise, for example, on large whales or on harbor porpoises. So we create a model that replicates the movements of a porpoise in the marine environment by using what you just said, these kind of equations and these kind of data. And then we also tell the agent at what kind of sound levels the agent, in this case a harbor porpoise particle, would swim away from the sound source. And this adds so much complexity and so much plasticity in our impact assessment, because previously we have been doing this impact assessment using static assumptions, basically that the animals would not move in response to underwater sound. So this is, in my view, the main advantage of using this agent-based model, that it's really a really great way of analyzing the impacts of underwater noise, for example, on marine mammals, but also on fish.
I agree. I also think that the beauty of using both models together is that you can make sure that once animals have responded to underwater noise, for example, they don't just move in random direction. They actually understand the environment. They know where the best quality habitats are located, so they will move in the direction of those areas. For example,
that's really fascinating when the habitat models go into are connected to the agent-based model, and that's a really, really benefit. And like we have talked a little bit about monitoring and modeling. How do they really go in hand? I always understood there's not either one or the other. They're really a good impact assessment or a good baseline would always include both the monitoring and the modeling. Is that correct?
Yes, especially in the marine environment, there is a need to be able to use data that have been collected during monitoring to relate those data to the dynamics of the marine environment, the oceanography, because you want to be able to understand changes in an area due to human activity. And if you look at the changes in distribution numbers of animals, for example, in an offshore wind farm, a lot of those changes are actually not related to the wind farm. They are related to the natural changes in the currents, for example. The daily changes in the tidal currents will change the distribution of species, and some species will move into a wind farm and others will move out. During the course of a day. So you actually have to use models to be able to monitor a piece of ocean efficiently.
Yes, you can basically design your monitoring based on your modeling exercises. Isn't that the case?
You can do that. And I think the best monitoring programs actually use both the data themselves, the observations, but they also apply models to get an idea of the sources of variation. That's amazing. On land, when we monitor impacts from human activities, we typically use a reference area. That is almost impossible to apply offshore, because the requirement is you actually have a reference area that is exactly the same in many respects as the impact area. That is very difficult to obtain in the marine environment. On the other hand, in the marine environment, we are able to models to actually control for the natural variability. That's important. Another important aspect in relation to monitoring and modeling working hand in hand is that models, especially agent-based models, they rely a lot on empirical data. So you actually need the monitoring data to calibrate your agent-based models in the best way.
Yes.
And one example here could be the use of radars to collect data about how birds are moving in offshore wind farms. Those sort of data are very, very important in order to generalize Asian-based models showing how birds are moving and how they may collide with turbines.
That's really important. I mean, you can use even a combination of different systems to monitor the movement of the birds in an offshore wind farm. I came across one of your developments, which is called the multi-sensor bird detection system. Can you tell us just very briefly about that?
Yeah, the idea was to develop a system that is fully automated, because it's difficult to get human observers on offshore wind farms, on turbines. So these multi-sensor systems, they actually are able to collect data on bird movements. They're also able to collect videos of yes. birds. You can identify the species. You can identify behavioral aspects of the bird movements. So they collect all the data that we have not been able to collect in the past. And these days, the quality of the data being collected is such that we can actually use them to determine collision risks for different species.
Fascinating stuff, Henrik. We are nearing the end, but maybe we can talk a little bit just briefly about new developments and the future of.
Yeah, the future, I hope we will make it possible for more people to get access to data. Access to data is one of the main limitations for these models. So there is a tendency at the moment that we have a lot of the data are really fragmented between monitoring programs, even at the national level. So I think there's a need, for example, if you look at the North Sea, the Baltic Sea, to make all the data being collected available for most people working with models and monitoring programs that would be beneficial. I think that now with all the innovation within machine learning, there are great opportunities to use machine learning with these models and in monitoring as well. For example, if you collect multi-sensor data, as we talked about before, of course, machine learning will make it possible to identify species on the fly.
Thanks, Henrik. These are certainly fascinating developments, and I'm very sure that your research will be part of these future developments. Now we are reaching the end of our episode, and thank you very much, Henrik, for your explanation.
Thank you. It was a big pleasure.
And thank you, everyone, for listening.
Thanks for listening to Water Insider. You can find more episodes on our website, dhigroup.com, or anywhere you get your podcasts. And don't forget to follow us.